The Pandemics and Public Emergencies Committee will now come to order. Victoria, please call the roll.
Chair Perez?
Here.
Vice Chair Caruso?
Here.
Democratic Ranking Member Schlossberg?
Here.
Representatives Bell?
Here.
Benjamin?
Here.
Byrd? Casello?
Here.
Cheney?
Here.
Driscoll?
Here.
Fisher is excused. DiLombardo?
Here.
Goff Marcil?
Here.
Mariano?
Here.
Mooney?
Here.
Smith?
Here.
Snyder?
Here.
Trimbolzi?
Here.
Zika?
Here.
We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Victoria. All right, members. Last session, if you recall, if you were on this committee received a presentation on comprehensive risk management strategies from representatives of Willis Towers Watson. And for today's meeting, I've asked them to return to talk to us about some of the steps that they are taking to develop a state government strategy specifically for us here in Florida and where we are on that process. And after the presentation that they give us, which is going to be a phenomenal presentation, so I already got a little bit of a glimpse of what we're going to hear from them. Very impressive. After the presentation, we'll open up for questions. So try and hold your questions up until the end. Maybe write them down on a nice little notepad, and then towards the end, we'll circle back to you. But, you know, members, many times because of the world we live in, we as members have to be reactive on things that are happening in the world because of how quick they are happening and how part-time our job is and will continue to be. But it's important to note that I think the speaker's done a phenomenal job, and I want to thank the speaker for thinking in a forward manner. Instead of trying to be reactive, he's trying to be proactive and seeing exactly what it is that the state is going to see as a potential hurdle over the next X amount of years, up to 10 years. And that is the way that we need to think, especially in today's society. So big kudos to the speaker for his knowledge and wisdom in moving forward and helping us as we do our job over the next several years. In doing so, I want to briefly introduce some of the panelists that are going to be here with us today and are going to give us a lay of the land. First, we have Mr. Philip Ellis. And Mr. Ellis founded Willis Towers Watson, go figure, right? The guy's the big dog. And so Mr. Ellis is going to give us a little breakdown of what's going on. And with him, he brought Mark Heineman, who is responsible for integrating risk and analytics tools, talent, and technology into the Willis Towers Watson value proposition in North America. And then we have Aaron Boulware, who is part of the global leadership team focused on client development. And what I want to do, Mr. Ellis, if it's all right with you, I want to kind of turn it over to you and introduce the rest of your team. And I know I left a couple out, and kind of give us a lay of the land. I know we got a sweet PowerPoint presentation that we're going to go through, and I'm sure many of the members are going to have some questions after that. But, sir, the floor is yours. You are recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Vice Chair and Ranking Member. Thanks very much for your time. So Mark's on my left, Mark Hyman, Aaron Boulware, and other members of the team, Lisa LaPuma on the end, Jackie Bruno, Delphin Valoria, and we have more people kind of behind us, but not present with us today. But thank you for your time. So it's been about 7 months since we last met with you and introduced an idea at that time about how the state might go about developing a risk protection strategy for the state, taking into account all the risks that the state faces. And we talked about why that would be a good idea. And as a result of your deliberations and working with Speaker Sprouse and in his office, they decided to launch a project to do just that. What we'd like to do today is to bring you up to speed on where we are in that project, not to be be too simple about it. It's a three-phase project. We're in the middle of phase two. So what you're going to hear is more about the process than about the results, because there's a tremendous amount of work left to do. But we want to keep you abreast of things, and at the end of our comments and the presentation, we'd be happy to take questions and see where we go from there. So the speaker wants to be sure that you are really part of this process, as you no doubt are aware this is a really important committee. And maybe the first thing to do is to land on where what it is that we're trying to protect. What is it that we're doing this project for to begin with? And fairly simple, or simply stated, and kind of hard to do. For decades, Florida has seen itself as being a great destination for Americans to live, work, and play. Not just Americans, but people from all over the world. And that mission is what we're here to protect, ultimately. It's a pretty grand ambition. That's why we're working so feverishly on it. It's taken a while to do it, but there are aspects of the mission of the state that are listed here that we're really being very very careful to make sure that when we look at risks and we look at the possible solutions to those risks, that we're taking into account how they fit these various attributes. One is affordability. Is this an affordable place to live and work? The natural beauty and of your state, the ecosystems involved in it. A vibrant economy. What does vibrant mean? It means a lot of things, but it means an economy that's diverse, economy that's resilient, economy that's innovative, great job and career opportunities, which goes hand in glove with a vibrant economy, an attractive range of leisure activities, the quality and reliability of your infrastructure, and health, safety, and security for your people. So those qualities are what we see as making up the supporting the mission for the state. So whatever we do in this project together has got to make sure that we're supporting that mission and those qualities. So we're developing a strategy that protects these qualities against anticipated and unanticipated natural and man-made threats now and, as the chairman was saying, in the future. Because what we're really focusing on here, and my colleagues will come back to this in different ways, is a 10-year time frame. 10 years sounds like a long time, certainly from political standpoint, given how fast things move and the kinds of risks that you need to respond to in your work for the state on a daily basis. What we've been directed to do is to think beyond that time frame. And we chose 10 years as being a period in which it is a time frame that we all can appreciate. Hopefully we'll still be functioning in that 10-year period. It's a lot longer term than a typical political kind of time frame, but it's not a very long term period when you take into account some of the risks that we're talking about, which are going to be evolving and very dynamic over the coming decades and generations, really. So it's kind of a compromise, as it were. But it's that 10-year time frame that we're going to keep coming back to. So that's what we're after. That's our overall mission is to help you protect your mission. I want to turn it over to Mark for a moment to talk about why we're doing this now.
Thank you, Phil. So the risk landscape has experienced significant changes and shifts, and will continue to experience those shifts over the next several years and throughout our 10-year time frame. Organizations both in the public and in the private sector are re-engineering their approach to how they think about risk finance and risk finance strategy, and to deliver greater protections in a rapidly changing world. And it's important for us to think about how that can be done in a way that's tuned to both future and current financial realities. If you think about the rapid evolution of risks, not only the evolution, but also the awareness of certain risks, we are encountering entirely new and increasingly complex threats combined with Internet of Things, things like artificial intelligence, machine learning, that has given us a massive amount of data that when combined with robust modeling capabilities has improved our ability to identify and quantify existing and emerging risks. The risk markets themselves are changing rapidly. Risk tolerance and appetite are shifting in the largest insurers and reinsurers in the world. And they are revisiting their capital allocation models, which is also impacting their capacity and their willingness to underwrite risk in certain geographies and in certain lines of business. Non-renewals, particularly in the property space, in the property market, are happening at an alarming rate and by very large global insurers with balance sheets that are comparable to the state of Florida. In terms of operational disruptions, every week we read about shocks that impact operational efficiency and stress organizations in very different ways. Supply chain disruptions, pandemics, cyber attacks, major shifts in workforce availability, just to name a few. The goal overall is to do a better job of linking risk and capital. The goal is to make sure scarce resources are allocated in such a way that ensures the best returns in terms of addressing or mitigating downside risk. And Phil is going to talk, and Phil and Aaron both are going to talk about more about how we do that and the importance of a diversified portfolio. But that's why the state of Florida has decided to create a risk governance framework that has the ability to compare correlated and nor non-correlated risks in a holistic manner and to deliver resilience in spite of the current challenges and dynamic risk landscape. So what questions are we trying to answer? There are two primary questions. One, how should risk be governed in the state to make sure downside risk and mitigations are evaluated in a portfolio and holistic view? And the second question is, what should Florida's risk protection strategy be? That's a broad question, but over the next 10 years, where should we focus our attention given the potential impact of the state and our ability to control or mitigate specific risks? Florida's risk universe is immense. There are thousands of protection strategies to consider and millions of various combinations. Robust analytics, which we have the capability to bring to the table, along with technology, must be employed to properly evaluate all available options and select those options that give us the highest return on capital. So we'd like to share some of the lessons that we've learned over the last several years. Bill, do you want to walk us through some of those best practices?
Thanks, Mark. And we're going to turn it over to Aaron shortly to talk about the project itself, but there's some foundational things. We actually mentioned some of this in the last presentation to you in March, but we thought it's important enough to kind of go over this again because you'll be hearing about risks from a lot of people other than us, and we just want to make sure that we can say what we can to help equip you with the questions that you may have and you may run into. So, as one of the world's leading economies and exposed as you are to a wide range of serious risks, we think there is, and we are developing a statewide all-risk protection strategy, and it's based on a number of lessons that we've learned over the years. And the first is to develop a strategy in a single language with agreed terminologies. That sounds pretty simple. It is almost never done. And in the state, at the moment, you have a way of evaluating risk very professionally, but in lots of different ways, lots of different departments, that make it very difficult to compare for you all when you're making decisions on where to allocate capital and people and talent. It makes it very difficult for you to make those decisions in a holistic, reasoned way. So an organization that doesn't do this is unable to compare alternative investments and to make good decisions. We're going to mention this word portfolio a lot, and the simplest way to think about it is how you look at an investment portfolio. It's the same kind of principles when we're dealing with risks. That evaluating risks in portfolio to account for risk independence and correlation. So every big organization is a stew of risks. It's not just made up of the ingredients. It's actually the meal that you have at the end. You have to look at risks as that stew. And there's a very practical reason for doing that, because if you don't do it in that way, you're likely to overspend on risk protection for milder events and underspend for catastrophic scenarios, risk scenarios. Okay? You're likely, because of the way the numbers work and the way human behavior works, if you don't think about these risks and compare them by combining them into a single evaluation process, you're likely to put your money, people, and talent and treasure in the wrong places. A third lesson is to take advantage of arbitrage among protection alternatives. So this work that we're doing is about landing on policies, actions, investments, real life decisions that you all will be making to make the state more resilient. It's not a study. It is a lot of research leading, we certainly hope, to actions. Actions that can happen in this session, but also a lot of actions and plans and processes that are going to be carried out in the coming years. So we really want to help institutionalize a way of looking at risk that the state's going to be using for many years to come. So the fact is that some of these actions are going to have a lot bigger impact for the amount of money you need to spend than other actions. And unless you look at it in a kind of holistic way that we're talking about, you won't be able to do that. You'll miss efficient opportunities to protect the state. A fourth gets a little geeky here, but just to say, as we did, 7 months ago, avoid the 1-in-100-year event trap. I'm sure you all hear, and it could be on the nightly news, or just conversations in the hallway, or in committee deliberations. Events like 1-in-100-year storm, 1-in-250, 1-in-1,000-year, all sounds incredibly remote. They are not remote, because that is a very poor way to look at and think about and speak about risks. When we talk about a 1-in-100-year event, when you look at a 10-year time frame, it's a 10% probability it's going to happen in that 10 years. That feels a lot different than 1-in-100 years. And there's an even more riveting way to look at it. Well, we've been working on this project. In the first phase, there were roughly 100 risks that survived the call, roughly 100, that were articulated through interviews, surveys, research, that kind of, about 100 risks. Those 100 risks are, each of them has a version of that risk that is a 1-in-1,000-year probability. So some catastrophic thing could happen from a storm perspective, a cyber perspective, a water perspective. That is a 1-in-1,000-year catastrophe. It's terrifying. So it seems incredibly remote. But when you have 100 risks and you take those 1-in-1,000-year probabilities for each of those risks, the probability that one catastrophe is going to happen in the next 10 years is 67%. Okay, there's a 2/3 probability that there is going to be something really catastrophic that happens to the state among those risks that will hit you, that you can't avoid. It's kind of terrifying, but that's the way the world works. That's why we hear about terrifying events around the planet, from day to day, week to week, that sort of thing. Now, a good question is, okay, but which one? We don't know. We're not in the business of prediction. We are in the business of preparation and being aware that when these things hit, hopefully you will have taken the actions that reduce the risk as much as possible and enable you to respond as well as possible. But it's incredibly important to know that having done your homework and done the best you can in preparing, they're still going to happen to you. And so getting in the blame game at that point is not a fruitful exercise, because bad things happen to big organizations. And you're a $1 trillion economy, and it's going to happen to you. So The deliberations of this committee, the role of this committee, are incredibly important given the kind of what's at stake for the state. Okay, so otherwise you'll be shocked at the crises you should expect because they're going to happen. Even more geeky, and this is the last point I'll make on this slide, is beware of value at risk. You may have people that come in front of you, or again, studies that you read, that sort of thing, talk about what the probability of damage, let's say, from a Cat 3 hurricane that hits Tampa, Tampa Bay, and that Cat 3 is going to cost $5 billion in damage. Let's say that's the estimate that's in front of you. It is usually going to be expressed in a term called value at risk. That actually means the least worst outcome you should expect from that kind of that category storm at a certain probability. The least worst. And the actual expectation is going to be multiples of that. So why the risk industry ever got into that kind of terminology, it's hard to say, but that's what was one of the metrics that brought down the banking industry in 2008, but is still in wide use in the risk industry. So just another thing to kind of be aware of. There are these traps that a big organization, a state can fall into, and we just wanted you to be aware that they're there and watch out. And we certainly are aware during our work with you now of these kinds of things. We're going to bear all that in mind. I want to turn it over to Erin now. Erin is managing the project, and she'll talk to you about the overall project timelines and that kind of thing.
About now. Okay. So we're well into the project, although none of here are our results. As Phil mentioned, ultimate goals for this project are to enhance the resilience of the state of Florida. And when I say the state, I mean everybody and everything in it. And then also to enable strategic risk action. So again, as Phil mentioned, what we're after here is what can we go do, right, that's going to either prevent or mitigate the impact of these risks that the state faces. So towards that end, we've got a three-phase project. We started out in phase one with really, as we sometimes refer to it, boiling the ocean. So thinking about all risks, like what are all of the things that could happen in the state of Florida that we want to be able to consider? And we went through the process of interviewing over 100 folks within the state, and we conducted a survey to try and get at what are the risks that are most significant facing the state of Florida over this 10-year time frame. In that process, with our interviews and our survey, we included folks in that like yourselves from the House of Representatives. We also talked to folks across state government, so agencies and departments across the state. We also talked to folks in academia and in private organizations. So got a really good cross-section from which to draw insight. And so through that process, as Phil mentioned, we've got to like 100 different kinds of risk that we really thought we would take a look at. And we're now in phase two, which is around really digging in more deeply into those risks, looking at both what is the likelihood of different kinds of risks events, what could the severity be if that kind of event were to occur, and then also exploring what are the things we could do about it. So what are the various policies we could put in place or things we could spend on? What are the investments we could make that would help to either reduce the likelihood or the impact of risk? So that's the process we're in right now, is really digging deeply into the risks that we've been examining. And then from here, at the conclusion of this work, what we want to get to next, and I'll get to it in the next slide as well, is two things. One is we want to talk about risk governance, how the state go forward continues to look at risk in a strategic and holistic way. And the other is, there are some things we're going to want to do immediately, right, as soon as possible, that we could that we could enact that would help to make the state a more resilient place. So evaluating what those strategies are that deliver bang for buck in terms of mitigating risk. So that's where we are. As Phil mentioned, critical to this analysis is our 10-year time frame, so thinking really forward-looking and strategic around risk. We're looking at impact of risk in both an economic context, but also thinking about other things besides just finance, right? As Phil put up, the beauty of our ecosystem, the natural resources that we have in the state, and what impact could be on things like health or other things besides just the financial impact. So we're thinking about those as well. And when we think about interventions, what we could do about these risks, we're thinking about what are the vulnerabilities that are actually making that risk sort of come to life. So how can we design interventions that are going to specifically attack those underlying vulnerabilities? So when we think about, as Phil mentioned, we talked about evaluating risk and portfolio and the importance of that. This is where we're headed in terms of the analytic capability and how we want to take a look at risk go forward. So what we're building out is this cloud that you can see on the screen. This is a way that we can look at risks that are very different in one framework, one context. And so when we think about these risks, when we map them this way, let me advance my clicker here. Every one of the dots that's on this cloud that we're building out for the state is a combination of things you could go do. So those are policies and investments both that would help to either prevent or mitigate risk. So every single one of those points as we build this out for the state of Florida will be a unique combination of things you could do. And we're mapping them here in a cost and risk framework. So along the bottom axis there, you can see cost. That would be, in this case, like the expense you might lay out to implement an intervention. And then on the risk axis, we're talking about bringing that risk down for the amount of spend. So when we think about the risks along the combination of options along that left bottom edge that are in green there, those are the ones for which you get the biggest bang for your buck. So those are the most efficient combinations of things you could go do about risk that will actually mitigate risk for the least expense. Oh, and I got ahead of myself. So where we would expect the state to go is from sort of the top left here towards the green dots. Without spending any money or without implementing any policies, you would have the most amount of risk that will map without spending any money, obviously. As we move down towards the green dots, what we're doing is changing up the things that you implement in order to get to a more efficient combination of interventions to actually mitigate risk. One of the concepts that's at work here when we take this approach to risk evaluation and more specifically intervention and solution analysis is this idea of portfolio. And this is sort of a graphic that lays that out for you. So when we look at individual risks that are laid out here, these are some examples. We're thinking about hurricane risk, of drought, risk of chronic water contamination. If we evaluate those each in its own silo and come up with a risk dollar amount, and then we just add them all up, right? We would get some very large number represented here as XX billion. But really when we think about risks in portfolio instead of risk by risk by risk, there's an independence to those individual events, right? They don't all tend to happen at one time. And so when we quantify the sum of, or when we quantify all of those risks in one context, instead of simply adding them all together, we can understand what's sort of a diversification benefit in looking at that portfolio. Anything you want to add to that?
Sure. Yeah.
so a real real-life example is from the corporate world, and I should kind of say that you may know this already, but you're the first state to do this. Right? So we do most of our work in the corporate world, but you're the first state leading the way doing this. So working for a very large, actually, their revenues are about, not much less than the state's expenditure each. So it's a big company, global logistics company. They looked at each of their risks in isolation. That's how they tended to do it. The board asked us to tell them every 20 years or so. So once in 20 years, roughly. What can we expect in terms of the downside to our business from these leading risks, these top 10 risks they had? And when they added up those risks, it came up to about a $12 billion hit to that company. So every sometime in the next 20 years, they could expect, because of the accumulation of all of these risks, a $12 billion hit to their earnings. But when you looked at it in portfolio in the proper way and showed the fact that these are independent risks, they don't happen at the same time, and that looking at it from a corporate perspective rather than the individual silo perspective, what they could expect was a $5 billion hit every 20 years, not 12. That's still a big number, though. So the next question was, well, where is that risk? And we showed that it was in a particular area, and they decided to sell that business. So there were actions that come out of this kind of analysis. Now, there's very unlikely you're going to sell part of your state, so that's not really a kind of a on the agenda. But there will be actions, a lot of actions that come out of this analysis, and the cloud of alternative strategies that Aaron showed. Each of those has very specific steps associated with it. So we'll be coming back to you with recommended very specific steps that you can consider. Some of those you're going to be able to accommodate in this session. Most are going to take longer term to implement. Some of them are going to be multi-year programs. And so it's going to take a lot of work to get to the point where you know what you want to do this session, and where you have a plan of exactly what happens going forward, or what you want to happen going forward. And then in the governance model that we'll come up with you, that'll guarantee that you continue to look at risks in this way, and that you can adapt as you learn more about the risks that are facing you. You can adapt that strategy going forward. Because we started out by saying that these risks are mutating really fast. Cyber risks 5 years from now aren't going to look anything like cyber risks today. It's just the nature of things. It could be that climate-related things change the patterns of weather that you have, and then that looks like it's more permanent 5 years from now. You'll have to adjust, but you'll have in place a governance system to do that. So you want to talk about governance a bit? Would you like me to?
Going a bit off script, but that's fine.
We're always innovating.
I think our plan was that ideally there should be a risk center, if you will, a risk desk. And that individual or that committee could be an extension of this committee. The exact structure, I think, is yet to be determined. But the idea is that a big part of our output, in addition to the quantification and the analysis and our first set of strategic priorities that we think should be the starting point for the state, is that a risk governance framework should be in place, a strategic risk framework that cuts through the noise, takes out the decision-making process from the political process, and drives informed decisions for the long term. Also providing a statewide view of risk that bridges knowledge gaps between agencies, because as we've said all along, probably the most difficult part is capturing the subject matter and technical expertise of all the various agencies and subject matter experts in the states. You have a plethora of PhDs, who have phenomenal understanding of their unique risks, but they aren't necessarily comparing climate risk in Miami with pension risk in Tallahassee. Our goal is to make sure that those seemingly uncorrelated risks can be compared in a similar framework, but it takes a risk governance framework to be able to do that. Anything you would add to that, Phil?
No, I'd just say that that it's probably, it's certainly among the more important things that's going to come out of this project is a way to govern risk in the state. So it's going to take a lot of deliberation. We're going to take lessons from the corporate world, but also apply them specifically to this state and what we've learned and what you're telling us about your needs. So I would say stay tuned, and we'll certainly be interacting with you all as we come up with a recommendation. So where are we now? We've completed the first phase. We have the second phase underway, and we're deeply into that. And up next is identifying the immediate priority actions, outlining policies and legislation, and providing a recommended plan for a system of risk governance. That's the project, it's a fascinating and a big one. But it is going to put you in a position, and really the world should know that Florida is breaking new ground by demonstrating how leadership can define and implement steps to make states resilient to the risks that threaten their missions. No other state that we're aware of, no other government that we're aware of, is tackling this. So it's something I think that you will be proud of, and our compliments to the speaker and to all of you for taking this task on. That is the end of our prepared remarks, and so back over to you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thanks, Mr. Ellis. Members, at this time, if you guys have any questions based on their presentation, now is your time to shine. Representative Caruso, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Ellis, for your great presentation. I'm excited to know that Florida is taking the lead in the country to reduce risk, and that it's in your qualified hands. So an idea. We're speaking of strategies and understanding that strategies are very complex and very involved, and we saw the cloud, and each one of those little tiny dots is a whole different strategy from the other tiny dot. But to give us an idea of what basic strategies or interventions, I think you used the term, are being developed to reduce risk of sabotage or cybersecurity or terrorism when it comes to our electric grid, what would be an example of an intervention to do that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole range. I probably, if I give an example, it might carry too much weight because we're looking at a whole range of them. So we've got four utility-related risks. There are a group of experts that we're tapping into, both within state and within the utility sector, that look at this. We're asking them what they think the interventions are that would be most appropriate for the state. But meeting with you all, we talked a little bit about the Texas situation and the problems they ran into, and looked at the differences between that state and this state in terms of how your utility sector is run, that sort of thing. And you're in a very different situation, I think a better situation. But there are some vulnerabilities that have to do with relatively limited range of fuels and range of ways to get fuel into the state. And so there are vulnerabilities there that an informed kind of cyber agent could take advantage of, and as a result, a hardening of those cyber related assets is clearly something that's going on right now. But also there are aspects that the state probably ought to take account, actions that the state ought to take in combination with the private sector in order to maximize the power of those interventions. But I don't think I want to get more specific at this point unless you're running the cyber.
The only thing I would say is we're looking at multifaceted interventions. So we can talk about preventing an attack from happening to begin with. We can also talk about how we respond when one does sort of inevitably happen. So those can be on both sides of that coin. We can try and prevent it from happening, but we can also respond quicker, which tends to lessen the impact of the damage.
Yeah, and there are, in the cyber cluster of risks, for example, that we're looking at, we're tapping into experts from law enforcement, from military security, as well as from the corporate world. So hopefully we're getting at the right interventions to come up with some recommendations.
And if you want to volunteer any, we'll take those.
We'll be happy to take any
suggestions.
Interventions you'd like to suggest.
Representative Schlossberg.
Thank you, Chair. You said there was 80 risks that haven't been identified. What are these 80 risks, and can we get copies of the work product to date?
So thank you, Ranking Member. The 80 risks are the ones that were on the survey that you all took. That was the narrowed down list of risks. And the 4 or 5 clusters, which we kind of organized them into now do our evaluation. Cyber cluster was one. A water cluster was other. We're looking at both chronic and acute water-related issues. We're looking at Delphi Valoria's leading our weather and climate work, which is not just hurricanes. It's other weather-related risks. We are looking as a serious risk. One of the scenarios we're looking at there is pandemic flu, which turns out to be a kind of a frightening risk that's there. And we're looking at property insurance costs. So it's really a diverse set of risks, but they were all in the survey that you all took. That's what you kind of responded to.
Follow up.
What I see, we're in phase. You've completed phase one, and then you have phase two and phase three. So in phase three comes the suggested policies and legislation. Are we going to have any of those phase three policies recommended legislation prior, like this legislative session, this coming legislative session? Can we expect to see that?
We certainly hoped, as we kind of say, to put runs on the board, and it's not us. It's the speaker and his office and this committee and the legislation. It's up to you, really. We'll recommend interventions coming out of phase two after we get through all of the quantification that seem to make sense based on where we land with that evaluation. But then it's over to you to bring it to life, and we'll certainly be there to help. Yeah, you'll see it all. Thank you.
Representative Zico.
Thank you, Chair Perez, and thank you, Mr. Ellis, and the panel members for the presentation. Going to page 7, I just want to make sure I'm fully grasping and understanding the math. Are you saying that the total risk at the present time estimated, and you may or may not be able to comment on this at this time, is $140 billion? And to avoid the risk, we require an investment of $7 billion to fully mitigate it?
Okay. This is an illustration.
Okay.
All right. These aren't real numbers for the state. Just want to be clear of that. This comes from the corporate world, but it is what we're going to be doing for you. Now what it means is that we will be, as a result, after, the product of phase two, we will demonstrate where the state currently is in terms of the risk to the state at certain intervals. So a 10% chance of happening over the next 10 years, a 50% chance of happening over the next 10 years, whatever. There are different ways that different intervals that we need, different probabilities that we need to look at. Let's say that we're looking at the events that you should anticipate happening over the next 10 years at a 10% probability. Let's say that that's the lens that we're looking through. It will be one of them. At the present, we're going to say that your current cost of addressing these risks is zero. Now, it's not really true. You're doing a lot to address risks, but we're using a baseline and saying we're going to start at zero. And given the analysis, there from those all of those risks, those priority risks, at a 10% probability over the next 10 years, you can expect an X dollar impact. So there will be a number. It happens on this illustration to be $140 billion. Probably not. Let's just say it's a $100 billion hit over the next 10 years. Then what we'll recommend, because that will most likely be unacceptably high to the state, we'll recommend interventions, investments, actions, policies, whatever, that you can execute that'll bring you down in terms of the risk and that 10% probability over the next 10 years efficiently. We'll bring you down efficiently along that, as Aaron pointed out, that efficient frontier. So, yeah, that's the process we're going through. Thanks, Representative.
Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and again, thank you to the entire panel for the presentation today. Just to follow up on Representative Schlossberg's question, I think more from a timeline perspective, when is the anticipated completion date of Phase 3?
Phase 3, so we have a contract that runs through the end of the year, so it's all happening, and it's fast. Speaker Sprouse and his staff all, you know, really working to time the discussions and the venues to have discussions for getting to the right set of answers. Now, but phase two, you know, the session extends beyond the end of the contract. So I would imagine that we'll be involved beyond the end of the contract and help you out beyond there as well. But that's not our decision. So.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just looking at the cloud graph again, the green baselines, is that each cluster of risks? And that's kind of where on those 80 risks, that's where they each one of those fall? Is that?
So what that is, each one of those, it's a great question. And by the way, it usually takes very smart people like yourself several times, several exposures to this, to get to the point where you really get it in your gut. This is not easy, but it's really important. So we want to be sure that and anything that we can do to help you all get to the point where you're really comfortable with all of this, we want to do that. This is kind of a conversation. We're happy to do that. But what each one of those green dots represents, as you say, each one of those dots is a full set of actions to take to address the highest priority risks. It's a full set of actions. And each one is distinct, maybe even distinct by just one intervention different from one dot to the next. But every one of those is distinct. So a good question then would be, all right, well, I see just a bunch of those dots. We're all efficient. Every one of those dots is efficient. Every one of those dots would be a strong action to take. So how do you choose? Well, you choose by going through more thinking about, well, does this really address the qualities that support our mission better than the one next to it? Is it more implementable? Better than the one next to it. So there's a lot of judgment that then comes in along those. This is the math is just the beginning. Then it becomes judgment, policy, politics, and all those good things to figure out what the best thing is to do. So, but we would be really happy, to to help you out with any of these concepts whatever venue you'd like. Thank you.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Chairman. You said we're the first state that you've worked with for this type of risk analysis. Is your analysis different for your corporate clients as it is to the state? And if so, how is it different?
Thank you, Representative. It's far more similar than it is different, but it is different. In the corporate world, you're dealing with a population of people that a CEO can tell what to do. And as great a leader as the speaker is, he can't tell everybody, you know, what to do here. I mean, we are tapping into expertise from all kinds of institutions, people from all over the state, from outside the state. One of the things that's been incredibly gratifying is that the people that we're dealing with and all these disparate organizations are incredibly enthusiastic. We had no idea how we'd be received. The doors are flying open. And so in that way, it's kind of more similar to our work in the corporate world because you know, when the decree goes out, work with these people do it. People could have been more resistant here, and they haven't been. So I think what is incredibly gratifying is across the spectrum of all kinds of people that we're talking to, people want to do the right thing for the state. And that's incredibly motivating.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Chairman. And thank you. I'm glad to hear that people are being cooperative. And, you know, for a corporation, I mean, ultimately their duty is to their shareholders and to their bottom line. We have different considerations, and our considerations may not always be the most logical or rational consideration. When you make recommendations to us, have you factored in just the rational, this is the dollars and cents bottom line, or are you taking into consideration some of the policy challenges or the politics? Are you leaving that to us?
Well, we're starting with the calculation, right? That's the baseline. We want to start with a fact base and with a baseline, but then the work really starts, and it has to do with working with you all on what is implementable, what is politically feasible, and in what time frame. Something that's politically infeasible this year may, over the time period of the next 10 years, which is the time frame we're looking at, actually become more feasible. And we are with each of these strategies on the efficient frontier, each of these little green dots, we're going to be very carefully weighing the degree to which that particular strategy supports the mission of the state. And that is something that takes a different side of the brain than the math. So we'll be using both sides of your brains and ours to do that.
All right, thank you. Members, any more questions? Representative Bell.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you to the panel for presenting today. It's very interesting, but very scary, I mean, what we're looking at. But are there any local governments that's looking at this plan to maybe adopt or partner with us?
Yes, absolutely. We are tapping into sustainability chiefs in various parts of the local government scene, local water utilities, county associations. I think in almost all of the risk clusters, in all of them, we've got local people involved in some way. Do we have a representative set of local folks involved? I think we have really outstanding people that are local that are informing this. Could we do more? Probably. But, they're involved. I don't know if you all, you know, Aaron, kind of the cyber end of things, kind of what's
happening. Yeah, I mean, same as you said, municipal power organizations. And, like, so we've got local representatives in the analysis. That's it.
Representative Casello.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Ellis, and your panel for coming today. It's very informative. My question is that you had said earlier in your presentation that 10 years is a long time. Most of us won't be here. Is this a strategy that can be tweaked as it goes? Is it fluid? Or once we set these parameters for these risks, opportunities go by?
It's got to be reassessed constantly. Thank you for the question, Representative. That's what the whole governance apparatus that is put in place needs to be looking at risks over time and adjusting. We hope that the strategy that comes out of this has some legs, you know, that really is useful. But, and also, this is version one. As much as we think of our own capabilities, this is so far, we're about 6 months into a piece of work for a $1 trillion economy looking at the universe of its risks and getting it down to a manageable set of actions is, I would just say, a tremendous task and can be done, but it's the outcome is going to be, if I may say, a lot better than what you have today, but it's version one, and you're going to get better next year, and the year after that, the year after that. So this is starting the ball rolling in a good direction, we hope.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Members, any other questions? All right. Mr. Ellis, you are free to go. Thank you so much for the time that you've given us, the work that you guys are putting behind us, not just you, but your entire team. It's been a pleasure to get to know you. I'm sure we will all stay in touch with you throughout the process and keep fighting the good fight, but we appreciate all the time you're putting into this state. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
All right, members, that will get us to the end of the road here, and seeing no further business before the committee, Representative Zika moves we rise, and without objection, the meeting is adjourned. Bam.